Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Activities, text number 36 and 37. Katam varateta vigaret,
katam varateta vigaret,
kairvajaye lakshanai,
kairvajaye lakshanai,
kimbunjito tavisvijet,
kimbunjito tavisvijet,
chayita sita yattiva. So what's it? Can you say it? Chayita sita yativa. Eta datyutta me bruhi.
Eta datyutta me bruhi.
Prasnam prasna vijambara. Nitya bhagho nitya mukta,
nitya bhagho nitya mukta,
eka eveti me brahma,
eka eveti me brahma,
katam varteta viharet,
katam varteta viharet,
kairvajayeta lakshanai,
kairvajayeta lakshanai,
kimbunjito tavisvijet,
kimbunjito tavisvijet,
chayita sita yativa,
chayita sita yativa,
ita datutta me bruhi,
ita datutta me bruhi,
prasnam prasna vidambara,
prasnam prasna vidambara,
nitya bhadho nitya mukta,
nitya bhadho nitya mukta,
ika eveti me brahmaha,
ika eveti me brahmaha,
tatam,
tatam,
in what way?
Varteta.
Varteta. He is situated.
He is situated.
Viharet.
Viharet.
He enjoys.
He enjoys.
Kai.
Kai.
By which?
By which?
Va.
Va.
Or.
Or.
Kayeta.
Kayeta.
Would be known.
Would be known.
Lakshanai.
Lakshanai.
By symptoms.
By symptoms.
Kim.
Kim.
What?
What?
Bhunjita.
Bhunjita.
He would eat.
He would eat.
Bhukta.
Bhukta.
And. Visvijet.
Visvijet.
Would evacuate.
Evacuate.
Shaita.
Shaita.
Would lie down. Asita.
Asita.
Would sit.
Sit.
Yati.
Yati.
Goes.
Goes.
Va.
Va.
Or.
Or.
Etat.
Etat.
This.
This.
Achyuta.
Achyuta.
Oh, Achyuta.
Oh, Achyuta.
May.
May.
To me.
To me.
Bruhi.
Bruhi.
Explain.
Explain.
Prasnam.
Prasnam.
The question.
The question.
Prasnavidam.
Prasnavidam.
Of all those who know.
Of all those who know.
How to answer questions.
How to answer questions.
Vada.
Vada.
Oh, the best.
All the best.
Nitya Vardha.
Nitya Vardha.
Eternally conditioned.
Eternally conditioned.
Nitya Muktaha.
Nitya Muktaha.
Eternally liberated.
Eternally liberated.
Ikkaha.
Ikkaha.
Singular.
Singular.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
May.
May.
My.
My.
Brahmaha.
Brahmaha.
Confusion.
Confusion.
I, my Lord Achyuta, the same living entity is sometimes described as eternally conditioned and at other times as eternally liberated. I'm not able to understand, therefore, the actual situation of the living entity. You, my Lord, are the heat. You, my Lord, are the best of those who are expert in answering the philosophical questions. in answering philosophical questions. Please explain to me the symptoms by which one can tell the difference between a living entity who is eternally liberated and one who is eternally conditioned. In what various ways would they remain situated? Enjoy life, eat, evacuate, lie down, sit, or move about. Therefore, in previous verses, Lord Krishna has explained to Uddhava that an eternally liberated soul is beyond the 3 months of material nature. Since a liberated soul is considered to be beyond even the superior mode of goodness, how can it be recognized? By false identification with the modes of nature which produce one's own material body, one is bound by illusion. On the other hand, by transcending the modes of nature, one is liberated. However, in ordinary activities such as eating, evacuating, relaxing, sitting and sleeping, a liberated soul and a conditioned soul appear to be the same. Therefore, Uddhava is inquiring, by what symptoms can I recognise that one living entity is performing such external activities without false ego, and by what symptoms can I recognise one who is working under the illusory bondage of material identification? This is difficult because the ordinary bodily functions of liberated and conditioned personalities appear similar. Uddhava has approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead, taking him as his personal spiritual master, and wants to be enlightened about how to understand the differences between material and spiritual life. Since a living entity is sometimes called eternally conditioned, how could he ever be considered eternally liberated, or vice versa? This is an apparent contradiction which will be cleared up by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 11th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Nature of Creative Activity. Om Jnana Jamirandasya Gyananjana Sulakaya Chakshuran Militam Tina Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadaha Mahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pambum Langaya Degarim Yakri Patamaham Bande Sri Guru Dina Karanam. So here, Uddhava's asking, Kim Lakshanai Jayeta? Which means, what symptoms would he be known by? Kim, what? Lakshanai, symptoms, gyayita, would be known. So how do we tell who's a conditioned soul and who's a liberated soul? That's basically the question. What are the symptoms? What are the symptoms of a liberated personality? A similar question is asked by Arjuna to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter. And what are the symptoms of somebody who's situated in transcendence? How does he sit? How does he walk? How does he talk? So it is possible to tell the difference between somebody who's liberated, somebody who's, and here, what is it? It's described as Nitya Bada and Nitya Mukta. And in between, because there's an in-between position as well, as we're well aware of, or we should be aware of, anyway. So, Krishna explains the qualities. The first information that we find in the Bhagavad Gita, pretty much. Basic principles of spiritual life, that we're not the body, that we are a spirit soul, and that the spirit soul is eternal. Is a part and parcel of Krishna. Is the basis of life, is the basis of action, of interaction, of anything that exists within the creation, is action, interaction, karma in other words, then there has to be the presence of the soul. Otherwise, if there's no soul, basically, it's dead. Right? So, the soul is the active ingredient, of course, facilitated by Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko babunam yo vididhati kamam. That of all of the eternal living entities, nityo nityanam, the supreme eternal is the personality of Godhead. Chetanas chetananam means that of all of the conscious living entities, he's the supremely conscious. Just like we're aware of what's going on in this body. But I don't know what's going on in your body. Well, I get an idea, maybe. By looking at your face. You know, they say the face is the index to the mind. I get an idea, but I can't know. I'm the knower of this body and have a limited perception of what's going on around me. I can't tell what's going on the other side of the wall. But Krishna's Chaitanas Chaitananam, he's the supreme conscious. He's conscious of what's going on in everything. This body, my body, your body, everybody. So, whilst we understand that action, interaction, karma is dependent on the presence of a living entity in the different varieties of bodies that exist, ultimately each one of those is dependent upon Krishna. Right? And we see a wide varieties of forms of characters, as Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, you know. The living entity is infinitesimally small. Anuraniyam, as it's described, very, very small. imperceptible. So small that it's imperceptible. Yet, you know, and so consequently, there's a living entity present in all of the millions and billions of microbes that exist within a cubic inch of air, right? There's so many microbes that exist floating around in the air. Each one of them has a living entity, jivatma, spirit soul. Amazing, if you think about it. Then there's the living entity in a mosquito. Yeah. Or the living entity exists in an elephant, big body. Or you get the living entity in a banyan tree, which is a huge living entity in one sense. So how does the living entity exist in all of these? You know, for persons who are materialistic, very difficult to understand the presence of the living entity, that he exists at all. Right? So Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, how there are those who, what is it? There are those who see those who speak of the soul as amazing. There are those who hear of the soul as amazing. There are those who see the soul as amazing. And there are those who hear of the soul and can't understand him at all. So this is a gross, you know, Prabhupada mentions those who are not austere, or those who attach to sense gratification. In other words, those who attach to a materialistic conception of life, is very difficult for them to understand the nature of the living entity, the nature of the soul, or the existence of the soul. It's only to those who are devoted, who have some symptoms of bhakti, who can understand the nature of the soul. And also, who are able to evince the qualities and the characteristics of self-realization. And self-realization comes to those who have particular qualities, specifically freedom from attachment to material conception, and specifically also the material pursuit, material sense gratification, basically. So, Uddhava is inquiring from Krishna, how do we tell the difference between a nitya mukta and a nitya bala? One who's absorbed in material activities and one who's absorbed in spiritual activities, if you look at them from an external point of view, they do the same things. They wake up in the morning, they eat breakfast, they go to work, come home. You know, there's not a lot of difference. They eat, they sleep, they lie down, they all do their ablutions in pretty much the same way. So how do we tell the difference between the two? And that's going to be explained in the next chapter. Chapter 11 is described. It's entitled The Symptoms of Conditioned and Liberated Living Entities. So we're about to find out the difference. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada explains at the end, the last section of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the answer from Krishna to this question asked by Arjuna. You know, how do we tell a liberated person? How do you tell? And Prabhupada says, the most important characteristic of a person is how they speak. Right? How they speak. The most important characteristic. And Prabhupada gives the example of how a fool isn't actually discovered until he speaks. Right? You know, he can be a very well-dressed man, look very impressive, and looks like he should be respectable, and we should be respectful to him. But then, when he opens his mouth, then he realises, uh-oh, he's a fool. Huh? You get that sometimes in a temple, in class, somebody turns up, and you know, they look like a respectable gentleman, but then at the end of the Bhagavatam class, they put their hand up and they ask a question, and everybody realises, uh-oh. So, the quality of speech is the indication of what's going on in the person's mind. Right? This is how we can understand. And of course, then we can measure, we can judge a person's realization of what they speak by then how they act. Right? So the qualification of a liberated person is that, as Prabhupada points out, is that they always are thinking about spiritual life. They're always thinking about how to serve Krishna, basically. That's a symptom of a liberated soul. They're thinking in terms of devotional service. Whereas on the opposite side, the person who's absorbed in a materialistic conception, they're thinking about basically about sense gratification. And their consciousness is absorbed in the external realm. Is that the verse that I was looking for at the end of class the other day? Yasyasti bhakti bhagavata kinchana. Sarvayarikunaistatra samasate suraha. The devotees, and especially Bhagavata Kinchana, means those who serve without material motive. A Kinchana means without having any possession, basically. Free from the sense of proprietorship. It's the nature of the devotees. They understand ultimately that everything belongs to Krishna. What was that verse I mentioned before? Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam E Ko Mahunam Yogadhati Kamam, which means that basically the supreme eternal and the supreme conscious living entity is fulfilling the desires of all others. Eko Bahunam, the one amongst many. Yogi Didhati Kamam, who satisfied the desires of the many. That's Krishna. And he's able to do that because he's basically the proprietor of everything. He's the provider, the sustainer, the maintainer, the support of everything. So the transcendentalist doesn't see himself as the proprietor. He sees Krishna as the proprietor. And he works for Krishna's pleasure, knowing that ultimately everything belongs to him. As Rai Prabhupada says, also in the Isipanishad, it describes how, you know, those who take things for themselves, basically they're thieves. Isipasyami damsaram yatkinchak jagatam jagatena jagatena mundita magid gidha kasya svitana, right? Everything animate and inanimate within the creation belongs to the Lord. Right? And we should recognize that. So a devotee does. He recognizes, oh, everything belongs to Krishna, so therefore I should use it appropriately. Whereas the materialistic persons, they have a different mentality, and they're looking at everything from the external rather than the internal, and they're looking at trying to possess and control and enjoy for themselves. This is the difference in consciousness. Harava Maktasya Kuto Mahaguna. So I think it's Prahlad Maharaj, is it not Prahlad? It's the fifth canon of Bhagavatam. I'm not sure who's making the statement, but then the question is raised, well, what good qualities can a materialistic person have? Manoratinasati davato bhi, because they're on a mental platform, chasing after everything from the external platform, external understanding of things. So, the devotees, those who are engaged in devotional service, their activities, their thoughts, their speech is focused on utilizing everything within their experience for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna gives the example of the tortoise. You know, a transcendentalist is restrained. He restrains his senses from engaging with the objects of the senses. Whereas a materialistic person who's absorbed in the external world is always attracted to the objects of the senses and wants to always engage with them. But Krishna describes that a devotee or transcendentalist is like a tortoise. And the tortoise is able, when there's a dangerous situation, and the tortoise is able to, you know, pull his senses in Right? But then when it's safe, his limbs come out, his head comes out. Right? So that example is used to describe a devotee who, if it's safe to engage in devotional service, to engage the senses in Krishna's service, fine, he's active, not lazy. There's another symptom, you know, a devotee is not just somebody who sits still and doesn't do anything, you know, om. This is a little like the idea of a transcendentalist, but rather, they're active, they're enthusiastic to engage the senses in the objects of the senses when there's an opportunity to render service. And so they're active, they're not lazy. However, if there are opportunities for sense gratification, then the devotee withdraws the senses, controls the senses, restrains the senses. So the symptom of a transcendentalist is that they are actively engaged in devotional service, but they also restrain their senses from sense gratification. So they're controlled. And their mind is equipoised, steady, as a result. Their meditation is on their identity as a servant of Krishna. And they're not distracted. This description is given by Krishna. They're not distracted. The example is given of the ocean. The ocean is vast. And it's not disturbed by the rivers that flow into it. So similarly also, the mind of a transcendentalist is peaceful, active in devotional service, but peaceful in that it is not disturbed by the desires that come. Devakinanda Prabhu gave a nice example of Yamuna Acharya the other day, you know, where he's quoted as saying, you know, whenever I think of sex life, then I spit at the thought. So the thought comes, but he's not attracted to it. Pertinent in Yamuna Acharya's case, because he was a king, Kshatriya. And, you know, as a Kshatriya, successful Kshatriya, many wives. So, he had an opportunity to engage in sense gratification, because he was a king. But when he became a transcendentalist and gave all of these things up, then, you know, the thoughts, the remnants, if you like, of his past, even though they entered into his mind, they didn't disturb his mind, because he was, and he mentions, you know, since I have been engaged in Krishna's service, I experience newer and newer delights in devotional service. And of course that fits in with the Vishayavinivarakante Niraharasya Dehina Rasavajam Rasopyasya Param Tristva Nivartate. He's embodied, as mentioned here, you know, they're both embodied, the liberated soul and the conditioned soul, they're both embodied. But what's the difference? The difference is that the liberated soul, even though he may experience the thoughts of sense gratification, or even for an aspiring transcendentalist, there may be the remnants of the urges to engage in sense gratification. Having experienced the higher taste, param drishtva nivartate, he doesn't actually follow that path because he experiences a higher taste engaged in devotional service. Because one who's on the liberated platform is always relishing their satchit ananda feature or form, and remain aloof to the attractions of the material existence. Whereas one who's materially absorbed, they're always meditating on the objects of the senses, and they're always attracted, and they're always pursuing that sense gratification. So the Krishna mentions, you know, one who's able to withstand or control the mind and the urges of the mind and the senses. We discussed this the other day. Vajra vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udra pasta vegam, ekam vegam, yogisha heta dira sarvamatimam pritivimsa sisya. Rupa Goswami says at the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, you know, one who is able to withstand the pushings of the urges, the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, the tongue's desires, the belly's desires, the pushing of the genitals. If one's able to withstand those urges, and it's done not so much as a test of strength, you know, like, you know, pushing against them, because actually you'll never win that tug of war. But it is done by the positive engagement of those, you know, there is restriction, and so therefore we have four regulated principles. So there are restrictions, but we're able to withstand those pushings, if you like, or tolerate those pushings by engaging ourselves in other activities, which is like a positive engagement. You know, if you leave children up to their own devices, what happens? Aditya, what happens? Huh? If you leave kids up to their own devices, what happens? Huh?
Is it very quiet or not?
Very quiet. That's the external. he's a transcendentalist.
What happens to many little kids?
What happens? If you're left up to your own devices, what ends up happening? I know what used to happen to me. I used to get in trouble. What are you up to? Come inside. Stop fighting with your brother. I was the oldest, so, you know. I let him know who was boss. And, you know, being a couple of years older, you have a weight advantage. So, you know, if you leave, you know, children up their own devices, basically they wreck things, or they bash each other up, or... So they get into trouble. But we know also that if we take that energy, that enthusiasm for action, and we engage it positively, then we get a completely different result. So therefore, you know, we send our children to school and, you know, we try to engage them in something positive so that eventually we get a very good result in the end. So the senses need to have positive engagements, otherwise, you know, Prabhupada quotes that, you know, the idle mind is a devil's workshop or a devil's playground. So in devotional service we have many, many positive engagements so that we're easily able to then follow the negative prohibitions. And in that way then we're actually able to manage, in fact it's not so much restraining the senses, but it's rather giving them positive activities to perform. The senses are engaged in positive activities, then the inclination to do some nonsense is curtailed. So, it's a, you know, the devotees used to have a big bus, said the Hare Krishna movement, the positive alternative. So really devotional service is a positive alternative in that it gives us positive activities which basically keep us out of mischief. Huh? Which is the same program for children. You know, give them something to do so that we get something positive rather than fighting and, you know, breaking things. And this is a symptom, this is a symptom of a transcendentalist. The transcendentalist is a person who is thinking about Krishna, is talking about Krishna. And that's how we test to see whether they're actually a devotee. We test their speech. But we also test a person's speech. You know, you can be saying so many things and then just be a big nonsense. Right? In fact, you know, I used to go to school, I always went to school with kids who'd tell stories. You know, my dad's a policeman. I used to go around to these places. Well, how come he's got a truck in the driveway? He's a policeman. If he's a policeman, he'd have a police car. How come he's got a truck? I think he's a truck driver. So, you know, there are people who like to say, you know, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other thing. But actually a devotee is the opposite. A devotee is a devotee, but he doesn't present himself as a big devotee. But we can test how much of a transcendentalist they are, whether they're a Nitya Mukta or a Nitya Bada, by looking at the quality of their speech. They're talking about Krishna, they're thinking about Krishna, and then they also are always serving Krishna. And we can see by the state of consciousness of the person how they're equipoised in any situation. They're not disturbed. The mind is peaceful, absorbed in thoughts of serving Krishna, not disturbed by this and that and the other thing. These are some of the symptoms of how we tell whether it's a Nitya Mukta and a Nitya Bada. The devotees are absorbed in service, understanding that Krishna is the proprietor, he's the maintainer, the supporter, the creator. At one level, that's the understanding of Krishna as the Lord and Master of the universe. Of course, there's the higher levels of understanding of devotional service in the different primary relationships that one can have with the Lord, which is the more elevated understanding. There's the Shanta Rasa, Sakya Rasa, Dasya Rasa, Sakya Rasa, Vatsalya Madhurya. That's a very elevated understanding of devotional service.
And Madhurya is
Madhurya, yeah. And so the devotee realizes Krishna in those different relationships, has that different understanding and loves to serve. So their internal absorption is in Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, whereas the materialistic person, the Nitya Bada, is on the mental platform. Mano Rati Navati Tavato Bahi. They're running after the external energy and the objects of the senses. Then their mind is disturbed by those interactions. And of course that's how we can test our advancement. The more we're absorbed in devotional service, the freer we are from desires for sense gratification. It's a test if we want to test our advancement. And when there's an opportunity to engage in sense gratification as a transcendentalist, it restrains danger. So it's like a tortoise, pulls your senses in. Whereas the materialistic mind is just uncontrollably absorbed in these things and attracted to them and runs after them. So these are some of the ways in which we can tell in ourselves and in others. And of course, we want to, you know, we want to be engaged in the positive rather than in the negative. And to engage our active propensities in those positive activities, positive engagements. And we're going to discover further, as we read on in chapter 11 here, we'll find out more about the symptoms of a person. 64 items of devotional service are explained by Rupa Goswami, that we can see. And other symptoms will be described here. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? I'm not actually sure what the time is. It's sort of hard to tell. 29. Good. Sure. What was that, sorry?
Living on the Bowery.
Living on the Bowery, yes. He was always what? I don't think it was only limited to the Bowery. I think it was probably something that he did constantly.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, he was missing Vrindavan also. Because he, you know, left Prabhupada and lived in Vrindavan for, you know, just from a historical perspective, he'd lived in Vrindavan for the previous, let's see, 1965 he went to the US. So he'd lived in Vrindavan for at least a decade. All right, 55?
Yeah.
Something like that, to 65? So, you know, he was definitely missing Vrindavan because he'd been
there.
At the Radhadhamma temple for so long. He was a resident. He was accepted by the locals as one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which is what, you know, why when Prabhupada came back with his disciples to Vrindavan, then people were very happy to see him. They greeted him with great enthusiasm. Because here was the Swami who talked about preaching and you know, pretty much Prabhupada's life was dedicated to preaching, right? Especially at that time, you know, he would travel backwards and forwards from Delhi to Vrindavan to print books. Printing back to Godhead magazine also. Then he started printing the Bhagavatam. So, you know, he went away saying that he was going to preach, and then he came back with the results. Pretty impressive. But yeah, he was. He was definitely missing Vrindavan. What to speak of his, you know, meditation on Goloka Vrindavan, that's something else.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if I spend any amount of time away from Melbourne, you know, after about 4 or 5 weeks, I start thinking, oh boy, I wish I could go home. Huh? I want to go back to Radha Balaba. I want to have a decent bite to eat. I can vouch for the fact that Melbourne Temple has some of the best prasadam in the world. In fact, I was advising the devotees in Italy, you should invite Korma to come and visit. So, you know, you do miss home. So Prabhupada was missing home. In more ways than one. What else?
Yeah. find that his internal mood goes on a lot of and down, not Barry.
Prabhupada was absorbed in Bhagavatam, translating the Bhagavatam, you know, all of the time, every day pretty much, translating the Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Is this like is this the same vision that we can have, that even though we're living in Melbourne, that we can see, we can access?
Why not? Well, I figure it this way. If we read Prabhupada's books, then basically we're associating with Prabhupada. And so, you know, by associating with Prabhupada, we're looking at the world with his perspective, with the same perspective that he had of things. So, by that association, then we also get the same vision. We see things in the same way. That's why Prabhupada, you know, translated so many books. It was to give his association liberally to everybody, so that we would see things in the same, with the same vision. So that's the idea. If we associate with the devotees, then we'll become like the devotees. That's what happens. What is it Prabhupada says? Prabhupada quotes the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. In that section that I was talking about, actually. Sangha. Sanghasya. The verse, it begins with, by meditating on the objects of the senses. What's that one? I'll find it. No, it's at the end of the second chapter. Jayato. Yeah. Sangat sanjayate kama. Sangat sanjayate kama. Jayato vishaya pumsam. Sangas teshu pujayate. Sangat sanjayate kama. Kama krodo pujayate. But this is the Prabhupada would quote this. Sangat sanjayate kama. If you associate with something, then you develop attachment for it. If you meditate on something, right? Constantly, then you'll develop attachment for it. So if you associate with Prabhupada by reading his books, then you'll develop the same qualities. You'll have the same, you'll become attached basically to Prabhupada and to Prabhupada's way of seeing things by that association. So why not? If that, and we see that's what happens. It works. Otherwise, if it doesn't work, it means the process of devotion and service is not effective. But we know the process of devotion and service is effective. Just our application of it is defective sometimes. Right? It's effective, we are defective. But that's it, you know, you'll see things very, very differently if you read. And if we chant, also then, you know, that the gross attachment for material things gets cleansed, it gets washed away. One loses one's taste for things material, and one increases one's taste for things spiritual. We've all experienced that. I hope. We probably wouldn't be here if we hadn't. Anything else? Good, let's go. Congratulations, Bhagavatam ki, Prabhupada ki, Jai.